Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Hope you're having a great day. The Doug Gottlieb Show broadcasts live and direct every day from Southern California. Welcome in. Turns out Steph Curry's still good at basketball. Just quick update for you. There you go. There's your basketball update. More NBA on the slate tonight. Dodgers season still very much alive, as predicted by this guy. That was my last words, were they not? Ramos had all the fear and all the heartache waiting, and ends up living to play another day because Chris Taylor's like, no, I'll just hit 3 home runs. I'll do my own version of Reggie Jackson.
That it was correct. The last word you said was Dodgers live another day before we went to the top of the hour.
What's your level of confidence?
Oh, it grows more and more now with Scherzer and Buehler on normal days rest. And yeah, you couldn't be in a better situation pitching-wise. If they lose, then that's just the way baseball goes. But as far as the situation you'd like to be in, I'm sure anybody would say, oh, this is a situation I'd like to be in. So,
That's baseball, right? No, but yes, you have your two best. You could be in a better situation. You could be
up 3-2.
Yes, and playing at home.
That's correct. That's or a you better,
could be
better
done with
situation.
The series. You could have won the series 4 games. None have been waiting in the World Series. Never been able to have
right. But in the situation you're in at this correct. Moment in time, yeah. That is the best situation.
Yes, and you're okay. Coming off of a great offensive performance, and it kind of feels like they're a little bit of a mess, right? Is that too far afield?
The Braves, Freddie Freeman and Rosario have been awesome.
Freeman was incredible. Yeah. Right? He didn't hit anything in Atlanta.
And then he's just unstoppable.
Completely unstoppable.
Yeah, and Rosario has just been, he's like 12 for 14. I mean, look, they're a very good team, and it's going to take 7 games to move on if you're the Dodgers. Obviously, if you're Braves.
Same thing with the Red Sox. Red Sox right. have Nathan Eovaldi going, right? And so they're going to be interesting. Nathan Eovaldi and potentially, I think they're going to throw Rodriguez. Whereas it'll be Scherzer, but Scherzer's not going to pitch till tomorrow, right? That's tomorrow, and then Sunday would be Walker Buehler against Charlie Morton, who wasn't great in his last start. So yeah, they have to feel good about themselves. I mean, relatively speaking, right? I mean, you're throwing Max Scherzer out there against Ian Anderson. I feel good about Max Scherzer.
Yeah, his ERA in the first inning is like 6.34 or something like that.
Is that bad? Is that
in one inning? It's not great.
It's not great. Okay, so look, last night the Browns end up getting a win on Thursday night, which I think we were all wrong on. I did have the under, so I went 1-1 last night. Browns and I had the Broncos and the under, and I want to get to the Browns. I do think it solidifies what we've thought. And look, the Saints believed it, the Jets knew it, you name it, the Carolina Panthers. Like, remember, Teddy Bridgewater's kind of bounced around a little bit here, and even when he was in Minnesota before he hurt his knee, he was really a game manager. Everybody likes Teddy Bridgewater, which is why he'll be in the league for 20 years unless he wants to go and do television. Like, Teddy Bridgewater's that well liked a human being in the league. He's just not that good a quarterback. If you can't capitalize on the amount of injuries that the Cleveland Browns had last night, and granted, the Cleveland Browns have so much more talent than you do, it's silly, but not on a night like last night. But if you can't, it does speak to your long-term viability. But I thought, like, the story was really more the Browns. I mean, I have a ton of Browns takeaway. And, you know, it's a Thursday night game, and we don't want to take, but I mean, I think Odell Beckham Jr. is washed. I think once again in this system, you know, a decent running back looks like a great running back. How many of you could have picked Ernest Johnson out of a lineup before last night. You can't. Now you're like, dude, he won me my fantasy game already. And then, of course, you got Case Keenum, who I will point out, I feel like Cowherd just latched on to my Baker Mayfield's Case Keenum. Like, they're the Case Keenum is the he's like you guys remember the movie Multiplicity? Right? Remember Multiplicity?
Was that Michael Keaton?
Yeah. It was Michael Keaton. And where Michael Keaton, he didn't feel like he had enough time at home, so he got, you know, he what's it called when they clone you? And then, you know, then they made a clone out of the clone, and that one was shaving his tongue, right? Copy of a copy, like a VHS. But the idea of a clone, like, that's who Case Keenum is. Case Keenum was 6 years in college, same system, even played for Cliff Kingsbury, you know, running around, throwing back there, making kind of plays. They're kind of the same guy, only Baker has a slightly stronger arm, slightly better quarterback than Case Keenum, but still kind of limited by size, limited by athletic ability. Case is probably better at running around back there. Baker's just a better thrower of the football. Here's Kevin Stefanski on Case Keenum's performance.
Case fought like he always does. I thought he orchestrated the operation. He took care of the football. And then that was a huge play at the end there, or not at the end, but in the end zone there on fourth down, just to make a play, fighting for extra yardage. But he did a great job fighting.
Here's Stefanski on his new running back, Dearness Johnson.
I could single out a bunch of guys, but Dearness Johnson to me is just a warrior, great teammate. What he's fought through in his career, and then to go have a night like that and to end it how he did on that third down, I thought was just outstanding.
I mean, the idea that a guy was not drafted and was fishing on a fishing boat to pay the bills, like, that's amazing. How much does fishing profession, like, how much do you think that pays? How much does that pay? He went for 146 and a touchdown. Remember, he played in the AAF, which we told you all along, whether it was Johnny Manziel, who did play in the AAF, right, or the XFL or whatever. The idea is, like, you just got to play football, put tape out there. You can't not be working, expecting people to, you know, come and give you a contract, come give you a chance when you don't have any recent tape. But I look at this thing, and it's a win for Stefanski. It's a win for that style of football. It shows that when you're down, even when you're down offensive linemen, that running the football, you know, inferior offensive linemen can become superior offensive linemen if you can hone their focus on running the football and being physical and firing out off the ball. Where those guys struggle is a lot of times in pass protection. That's when you separate the men from the boys, because in pass protection, you're going against Von Miller. You know, even Von Miller at this point in his career is just a freak athlete, and he's better than you are. But in run blocking, it's just different. But what a huge win for Stefanski. What a huge win for his coaching. They did so. Odell Beckham Jr. was out there, but had essentially no effect on the football game. You do it with a backup quarterback, with a third string running back, with backup offensive tackles, with injuries all over the place. That's a coaching win. That's a front office win. That's a, hey, if we make the playoffs this year, Case Keenum is a big reason why. That's his job, to come in one game here, one game there, and just run the offense, just be good enough to not be the reason that we got beat. And mission accomplished. If the Browns make the playoffs, if the Browns go to an AFC championship game, hell, if the Browns go to a Super Bowl, no one's going to remember this game, because you had so many backups. It's a Thursday night game. There'll be games against the Ravens. There'll be playoff games that people talk about. But this was a gigantic game. You hadn't played well in a couple weeks. You don't have your quarterback. You don't have your tackles. You don't have some of your receivers. You don't have your top two running backs. And yet here you are. You beat a team like the Broncos, who aren't super talented, but they got some talent now on both sides of the football. That was a lot more fun, a lot more interesting than I thought it would be. Granted, I'm sure a bunch of you didn't watch, but I thought it was pretty good football and pretty telling. And it felt like the last time we really, really got to pay attention, hoping Odell Beckham Jr. becomes some shadow of the guy he used to be, when he's really just a shadow of the guy he used to be. All right, coming up next. By the way, this show is brought to you by one of our favorite cities, Las Vegas, the greatest arena on earth. Every game, match, race, and competition, it is always on. Whoever you root for, whatever sport you love to watch, the biggest games are even bigger in Vegas. So let's make sure to plan your trip today at visitlasvegas.com. LasVegas.com. Visit LasVegas.com. Okay, John Gruden says the truth will come out. What does that mean?
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at FoxSportsRadio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. So John Gruden offered some words last week, briefly speaking with HBO's Real Sports podcast about the scandal. Andrea Kramer, who of course has covered the league for years, relayed what Gruden said. Maggie Burbank, who produces the story that we just did on Mark Davis, she actually called Gruden and he picked up the phone, much to, I think, her surprise. And he's still in Las Vegas. He's letting the dust settle. He said, people who know me know what I stand for 58 years. I have a resume of 58 years. The truth will come out. It's certainly cryptic. So now apparently, you know, Congress getting involved. They want to see and know what's going on with Dan Snyder and emails, et cetera, et cetera. When you hear truth will come out, like, I didn't think that was cryptic, but when somebody posts that it's cryptic, now it becomes cryptic. Does that make any sense? Like, Jay Stu, did you think that's cryptic to say the truth will come out?
There are a lot of words that come to mind, but cryptic is not one of them. No, that seems pretty straightforward. I just don't know what the truth could possibly be.
I'm going to venture a guess in a second. Byer, it just doesn't feel like clearing your name is cryptic. I don't know. I feel like the cryptic thing has thrown everybody off.
I think clearing his name is one thing, and having other people also be implicated is totally another.
Do you think that's what he means?
I think he means the latter. I think that he means other people will be brought, yeah, their information will be brought to light. I don't know how his comments could be, you know, cleared up. For example, if Bruce Allen used the same phrases, I'm just hypothetical, we don't know. It still doesn't, you know, give John Gruden a pass to.
I think if Bruce Allen he had used the same phrases, I think he would have gotten dinged in this thing because he's not currently in the league. Right? There's no logical reason why Bruce Allen wouldn't be implicated if he had used the same language. Right?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Well, considering he's connected to this stuff, but this does one of the critical points of this investigation is that John Gruden was the, you know, only one dealing, you know, only one that has been hit with this.
Right. There is this assumption that there's a smoking gun out there somewhere else and that this is the NFL. And like, look, it does feel like you're, what is the movie I saw? God, it was a
Multiplicity?
No, we just talked about Multiplicity. there's a World War II
Dune
movie. Has anybody seen Dune?
Not yet.
Okay. I mean, do we have any idea on this thing? On Dune, if it's any good?
I don't know what it is.
Well, Dune was a best-selling novel that they made into a movie in the 80s, and it was like a train wreck, like over budget, and it sucked. This one's supposed to be better, but I have no barometer.
Ramos, you're our resident cinephile.
I know it's on HBO Max, I believe, which I do have, so maybe I'll check it out.
Okay.
Yeah, Jason is right, though.
You don't have to go to the theater to see it? You can do the.
Yeah,
HBO
I think it's
Max.
On HBO Max. I think it's also streaming live or streaming for people who have HBO Max. That's my understanding.
Is this a prequel to Hoth? Is that what this is?
No, but.
He thinks he's so funny. He actually is very funny. This is really good. There was a recent sub movie that I saw, and maybe I saw it on a plane where. I've seen Das Boot. Hunting for October is my personal favorite. I've seen Crimson Tide.
U-571.
Okay. I've seen that one, but there's more of a recent one. I'm trying to think of what it was called. Like, who was it? Tom Hanks was in it.
Oh, the one on Apple TV Plus.
Yes.
Oh my God. That was a great movie.
Greyhound.
Oh, it was so good.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah, yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, so it was Apple TV. That's where, I mean, you know, it's one of those where you're watching it late at night. And you're
you
like,
don't know where you're seated on?
Yeah, yeah. It's really, Greyhound's very, very good. Have you guys both seen it?
I don't know about Jason or Dan, but I have seen it. Yes,
I have not.
Awesome.
I have not. I need to see it though.
It's really, really
very
good.
Tense and like you're. Oh my God,
the whole thing is tense and feels real. I mean, he's incredible. It's really well done. Anyway, they have these. You know, they had these. You know, they're trying to get these U-boats who are in the Black Pit, which is, you know, that mid-Atlantic gap, you know, where they were, you know, just sinking ship after ship after ship. Anyway, it's like the, is it called a subterfuge, right? Where it throws off the scent of the torpedo, right? Where the torpedo chases after the heat or whatever, and that's what blows up. That's what most people think Washington's doing. Right, that the formerly known as the Redskins, now the football team, are first they threw John Gruden under the bus, then they threw out the Sean Taylor thing, like anything we can to please don't look at what's really going on here. And that's I think what Beyer's getting at. Am I wrong, Beyer? That's I believe what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think so.
I just if that were to come out, I think it would be worse. That would be the cover up being worse than the actual crime. The part about Dan Snyder being implicated, apparently he doesn't have a personal email address, so they're not going to find any emails with Dan Snyder. So I think the whole thing is interesting. I don't know. The cryptic part is the one that I think throws us off because there was nothing cryptic about it, only in that, I guess if it's cryptic, we're trying to figure out, does that mean he's clearing his own name or does that mean other people are going to get thrown into this thing?
I mean, why would he say he's got a resume of 58 years if he doesn't think his name will be cleared? I mean, but is there anything that could possibly come out where you're like, oh, those homophobic comments were justified? Like,
yes.
There's
yes.
nothing that's going to clear his name.
I disagree.
How?
Are there some Carl Nassib emails? Are there some emails where he's, you know, where he champions Carl Nassib's ability to come out of the closet and be the first openly homosexual NFL player? I think that, are there other emails out there from that same time period where he's actually a champion? This is kind of what I've gotten to. Like, look, I understand how everybody's reaction is when you read it. Totally understand. It feels when you read it like sophomore high school guy in the 1980s or 90s just talking trash on everybody. That's what it feels like to me because there's some language in there like just I don't think most people use anymore and you kind of felt like a head of a football organization or guy who's a leading analyst on ESPN, not going to use. So I think there's a little, and I think that's how he talks? Yes. But again, that does not necessarily a racist make, right? Like, what are you actually doing with your job? Are you actually, you know, are you using these words, but in reality, you're very open to change? Or have you evolved on homosexuals playing the NFL or there's a lot that could come out. So I actually do think there's a potential of other emails, other people swearing by him, other things that he's done that people haven't seen that he hasn't championed that right now, if he throws out there, you're like, oh, you're just doing the, I got a black friend, so I can't be a racist thing. But the reality is he hasn't been a racist. He's been the, you know, Andre Rison came and had his back. There's other guys who have had his back previously for things he's done for players of all races. And maybe that's what he means. I just don't know how would he know that there's implicating emails to anybody else unless it was already on his email chain. And if you feel like it was on his email chain, wouldn't that have already come out? Stug Gottlieb Show, you're on Fox Sports Radio. John Middlecoff joins us. Three and Out is, in fact, the podcast. What do you take from this? What do you take from this Gruden? You know, the truth will come out and it's deemed to be cryptic. Do you think that he's going to clear his own name, or do you think that there'll be other people thrown into this?
Well, I don't necessarily know how you clear your name. Like, his name was on those emails, right? I mean, he resigned because of the emails. Maybe what he's talking about or alluding to is that other people are going to go down with the shrapnel as well. Because I mean, in fairness, obviously, I live in the East Bay where the Raiders used to be. I know a lot of Raider fans. There's a difference between defending the guy and thinking that the Raiders, now granted, this fan base has always thought this, and granted, a lot of times the league has come after them, and they have a long history of that. They went after Daniel Snyder and the Washington football team, and the only thing that came out of it was John Gruden and the Raiders. So I would guess he's alluding to that. I think the tensions, it's been well reported. I think the tension's in the Raiders operation. And I talked to someone on the staff that, you know, I think their whole coaching staff thought he got railroaded. Not that they agreed with what he said. I think Derek Carr said it. They all, you know, it was an uncomfortable situation. But how could we go after Dan Snyder and end up with Gruden? And then, you know, it's one thing if Gruden got taken down with like 10 other people, but he was the only guy. And I think it's a bigger picture thing, and this goes back to a lot of Raider fans that would say, you know, and I don't think they're wrong on this, the league wants Mark Davis gone. You know, Vegas, now that they're there, and let's face it, the big reason they're there is Jerry handled it, the league let him. I mean, it's not like Mark Davis was wheeling and dealing. And the Vegas market, now with the power of gambling and just the power of that market, I mean, you know, we live in California. I mean, I think Vegas and Scottsdale are going to grow at rates over this next couple decades that are going to be like California used to be. It's just way cheaper to live there, especially Vegas, no state income tax. And then all the casinos are based there. So the amount of cash that's on the line for them to get, you know, a big boy owner or a new guy with a lot of cash and that can wheel and deal. And that's what, in my theory, is it's just kind of starting with that. Now, I don't know how they force Mark Davis out, but it does feel like they've been circling like great white sharks, and he's the guy on the surfboard up on the top of the water.
It's Doug Gottlieb's show here on Fox Sports Radio. Okay, last night, my takeaways from the Browns are, one, I kind of think Odell Beckham Jr. is washed. Let's just start there. I mean, is it too quick to call him washed considering he's coming off an ACL? But, I mean, it's one thing to not have the same explosiveness. It's another thing now to be dropping the ball where you were most known for your ability to make spectacular catches. Is it too soon to call him washed?
Yeah, I mean, I think any time as a player, Odell Beckham was not Julio Jones or Mike Evans, right? He was a smaller, lighter built guy that was built on elite explosion and change of direction, and he was just a high-end athlete, right? Like Russell Westbrook or something. So you tear your ACL, especially a little, you know, as an older guy in his career, and I know he's not like 35, but that was going to take some time. But let's face it, like, it was going weird in Cleveland before he got hurt. And one thing with offensive coaches, and that's really what the Browns have had under Baker Mayfield, if you give them great playmakers, they will try to get the ball in their hands. They will do it. You see it a lot with these now athletic tight ends. They did it on Monday Night Football with Dawson Knox. I saw the Steelers did it a couple weeks ago with Eric Ebron. You do whatever it takes. End arounds, get the ball in stars' hands. I mean, Andy Reid's made a career out of it now with Tyreek Hill and Kelsey. So Stefanski, who I think now has a pretty good track record, like the guy knows what he's doing on offense. And offensive skill guys explode under him. And for whatever reason, he does not like Odell Beckham. He can say whatever he wants. And I don't mean personally, I just mean as a player. They're kind of over him. And this notion that he's going to get traded, part of the reason Stephon Gilmore, who was injured and a much better player when healthy recently than Odell Beckham, was so hard to trade, and the only reason they got a six for him, people don't have cap space. Like, he's not a tradable player for guys with lower cap numbers. I just think they're kind of stuck with him, and I don't even know if they'd be able to give him away, to be honest with you.
No, it's a weird thing. And I mean, look, Stephon Diggs left Kevin Stefanski and has had a you know.
Yeah, he's an elite player. I mean, in the peak of his powers, and he didn't get hurt. And he went to Josh Allen. You know, I mean, Josh Allen's a better quarterback than anything Odell's playing with. I mean, Baker's okay, but that's fair. I mean, I just think the Beckham thing, because I thought he was an elite player as a young guy. Obviously, he benefited from the market, but he was really good. And for whatever reason, focus, you know, I mean, listen, I'm not around the Browns, but it clearly feels like offensively, like when you just watch their team the last couple of years, you go, God, Jarvis is really into football. God, Nick Chubb is really into football. Does it feel like Odell's really into football? That's my thing. Like, these guys, like, you watch Nick Chubb and Jarvis Landry play under Stefanski, you're like, these guys are, every team in the league would want these guys. You watch Odell Beckham play, you're like, I watch a lot of football. It's like, he look any different than the Broncos wide receivers running around out there? I didn't see much difference.
Nope. I couldn't separate, like, just a guy. Denver becomes, now they got to get a quarterback. It's official, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's beneficial. I tweeted this last night, and listen, Teddy Bridgewater, I have nothing but respect for him. You know, everyone that I know that's been around him, they love the guy. I've seen it firsthand at a Raider game. I think his first or second year in his career, and I used to get there really early, the way he treated kids in warm-ups. I mean, his character is pristine, and he was an okay player before the injury. I don't think he was ever going to be what some people thought he was going to be, but he was solid. And to overcome that injury, and he's proven, like, he's a really good backup. But when backups, and I said this on the podcast last night, at any position, whether it's you're filling in for Joey or Nick Bosa, or whether you're filling in for a quarterback, one game, you can be fine. Hell, two games, like, you might not notice that big of a difference. But every game that goes by, especially in football where they specifically game plan, and a position like quarterback, you just get exposed. And his team, you know, when he filled in for Drew Brees, that team was stacked. And I remember a couple games, he didn't have to do anything. Their defense was making plays, their special teams were making plays. And he could have a game or two here and there, but if he has to start 10 straight games, you know, six or seven of them are going to look like, oh, my God, what is going on here? And that's what's happening. And I think I don't blame him. You know, he went to Carolina. He was adamant, I'm going to be good. Like, wasn't that good. Then he came here. He really wanted to start. He's a backup. And I think that's just a reality with a lot of guys. I mean, how many good quarterbacks are there in the first place? So he's miscast right now, and you're right. The problem, though, Doug, is how do they get a quarterback? Right, I mean, I watch a lot of college football. I don't see any guys that I would take in the top 10. Matt Corral, you know, I don't know. He's not a top 10 quarterback. I haven't seen the Liberty guy, but clearly I don't think the league views him as some elite prospect in terms of that level. And then you look at the guys you could trade for. Well, it's going pretty well for Aaron Rodgers and the Packers right now. He's going to leave the Packers to go to the Broncos? That would make no sense. Absolutely, it would be the most moronic personnel move by a player in recent memory. And, you know, Russell Wilson, I guess we'll have to see, but was Denver even on Russell's that random list that he threw out? I don't remember them being on it. So who are they going to get? That'd be my question.
I don't know. Let's go to the other big story of the week, which is Deshaun Watson and this rumor that Miami wants to make a move for him now. Meanwhile, Miami today came out and said, hey, we're happy with our quarterback. Tua is our quarterback. We're happy. Doesn't mean anything. But I do wonder, who do you think's leaking this to John McClain?
Well, I think it's Houston because I don't
blame
them.
Drive up the price?
Yeah, and just get rid of this issue, right? So they don't have to talk about it. They don't have to just deal with the ongoing saga. I think their problem is going to be, how would you offer – you know, I'd offer a first-round pick for sure, but how could you offer the real package, right? When Russell, Rodgers, and Watson were going to be on the open market, we're all like, you know, especially for Russell and Deshaun's way younger than all three of them, it was like, you know, three ones and a two and a player. You could not do that right now with his legal situation. But if you're Houston, you're like, yeah, can't just give him away, you know, because if I was any team, I'd trade like a second-round pick for him right now. Worst-case scenario, he goes to jail. It's like, whatever, it was worth the risk. But they're kind of in a weird spot because I understand that their team's terrible. They're just trying to kind of reset everything. Deshaun's never going to play for them again. But if you're even Miami, who maybe you're just trying to take advantage of them, they're desperate. They're 1-5. Like you said, Brian Flores had to say, this is the second time, Doug, in like a month and a half he said that. Remember, I think right before week 1, remember he got in front of the team with Tua and was like, Tua's our quarterback. Like, how often you got to say that? This isn't high school football. This is the NFL. People don't even talk like that. I lived in the San Francisco with the Jimmy and Trey. They never talk like that, and they got two quarterbacks. So it's like, it's a disaster. And I don't blame the owner for being, hey, guys, I paid you guys a lot of money. I trusted you to do this complete rebuild, Sam Hinkie style. And then you had the opportunity. I'm just some super rich guy. You guys are the football guys. And you picked the wrong quarterback. I mean, I'm watching football every week, and I see this other guy with the Chargers. We could have had that guy. We passed on him. And you can say, well, John, everyone would have taken Tua. Well, if I'm Stephen Ross, it's like, well, I'm paying these guys to not be everybody and know the right decision. So now you read these stories, like they're fighting for their jobs. The thing is, you could argue taking Tua over Herbert, you know, a lot of guys in the league might have, so it won't just ruin their ability to get jobs in the future. But if you trade for Deshaun Watson – and something comes out where it was valid and you get some serious trouble, like that could end your career for a while, ever being a head coach or a GM again. So it's a slippery slope for these guys, surely being, you know, pressured by the owner to figure this the hell out.
It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. How fixable are the Chiefs' issues?
Well, their offense has been fine. I mean, they obviously had the turnovers. Mahomes throwing a couple bad turnovers.
Can't run the football anymore, though.
Had a couple unlucky picks. But, you know, the history of Andy Reid's run game is the screen game. So as long as Hill and Kelce are healthy, the offense is not going to be the issue. It's just, can their defense be functional, you know, and just force a couple field goals instead of touchdowns? And one big issue, one of their safety, Sorensen, and Andy's got a soft spot for BYU. It's where he's from. He always has a BYU guy on the team. And Sorensen's been a role player on, you know, they're really good teams, but he's been getting just destroyed. So they made a switch with him. And if that can just help them out a little bit, hard to tell against the football team. But, you know, I think they'll be fine this weekend against Tennessee. I'd expect them to get their mojo back as the season goes. Now, is it going to be as easy for them just to be in the Super Bowl again? Obviously, their defense is going to have to play a lot better. You know, I think we would all, if I told you Hill, Kelce, and Mahomes are healthy for a playoff game, you're going to feel good. But if they have one of the worst defense in the league, it can bite you. So if their defense can just get a little better, they can get some guys back for injury, hell, we haven't really seen any like Deshaun Watson type names on the defensive side of the ball, but you know, Andy's always willing to wheel a deal. Like if a player, again, I don't even know, Jalen Ramsey type player's not even out there, but like they will just say, hey, we'll give a first round pick for a Pro Bowl level defensive player. They won't hesitate to do that. They're operating and they will continue to operate kind of like, you know, like a LeBron team. Like they're trying to win the Super Bowl every year because they have this quarterback in the peak of his powers. And still, like they're probably not going to have home field advantage, clearly. But do you think they're intimidated, you know, to go on the road and get a win? Now, again, you got to tackle and you got to stop some people on defense. But they know they can score with anybody.
Yeah, no, I get all of that. Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Okay, did we know that Mike McCarthy is this bad at in-game decision-making?
Doug, I think most coaches are pretty terrible. And in fairness, and the overwhelming majority of people listening to this and to talk about this have never been on the sideline, right, and been the head coach. It is, I don't think, as easy as it looks. I'm not trying to defend them. I would have fired Mike McCarthy last year. And even this year, I think their team is, I mean, honestly, if you told me they were the best team in the NFC, I know the Cardinals had the best record, but I think you could make the case for Dallas. It's, you know, it's hard. I don't think coaches are comfortable. Things happen fast. That clock's moving a lot faster for a guy on the sideline. You know, I know he's not necessarily calling the plays in for us on the couches, but I my question with McCarthy is, like, what's he really doing? So, like, back to what you – if he's not going to be just a dominant, you know, clock management timeout guy, well, he's not calling the offensive plays. Kellen's doing that. Obviously, defense special teams he has nothing to do with. What's he really doing? Now, clearly, he gets – when you're the head coach, though, you could say the same about, like, John Harbaugh. He doesn't call offense or defense. He just kind of motivates and, you know, swings some swords or has some motivational speech pregame, and we give him a lot of credit. So, yeah, I mean, I think the overwhelming majority of coaches, including the top, like Nick Saban, are not, like, dynamic with timeouts at the end of the game.
No, but he's especially bad. And he's won a Super Bowl. It's not like he just started doing this. And he is really not good at it.
And again, I don't know him personally, and I have nothing against him or anything, but it does go back. Aaron Rodgers basically alluded he didn't think he was the sharpest tool in the shed, right?
Right, right. And Aaron Rodgers seems to be correct. John Middlecoff, Three and Outs, the podcast downloaded. It's awesome. John, have a great weekend. Thanks for joining us.
See you, Doug. You too.
Will Ben Simmons play a game in a Sixers uniform? Find out next.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
What up, Doug Gottlieb Show? Fox Sports Radio. Hope you're having a great day. Doug Gottlieb Show continues on. There was some epic foreshadowing by your boy. That's me. Epic foreshadowing. Brought to you by, right? There was some epic foreshadowing that I was able to come up with. And it was pretty simple in that when Simone Biles opted to not participate in most of the events at the Olympics, I wondered what would it look like if, and it's not a direct parallel, like I don't think that in men's sports you will ever see a star athlete, and she is a superstar athlete in any sports world, but she's a superstar obviously in gymnastics, say, I can't participate in our sport's biggest event because of a mental health issue. Now, the truth is she had what's known as the twisties, which we look at when you hear mental health, you get all the you get all the people who like you're just not sensitive enough. And like, look, there's all different levels of what a mental health issue is. And as I've told you before, generally, this is a generalization, but it's a true generalization. Generally, in sports, what allows athletes to be, well, better than the rest of us is that they can push through. Brett Favre, when his dad dies, can still perform. You know, how did that guy do it? How did he overcome? Who was the kicker for? He's a longtime kicker, and I think he was kicking for, I'm going to say, either the Falcons or the Buccaneers. Remember his son died?
Matt Bryant.
It was Matt Bryant, right? And Matt Bryant kicked that weekend after his son died, and I'm like, I'm crying watching. He's crying kicking extra points and field goals, and you're like, how does that guy do that? And the answer is, like, that's the spirit of athletics, is that these men and women are able to compartmentalize their fears, their anxiety, even off-the-field depression, any sort of issues, and then go out and perform way better than we're actually capable of. That's what makes them them, right? So look, it's a different deal now. So Ben Simmons, this is not LeBron before the NBA Finals, hey, right? And Ben Simmons obviously is a different dude and has a different background and wasn't subject to the crimes that happened to Simone Biles. But remember, if we're fair about Biles, that wasn't what she said it was about. It was never brought up. It was more the gymnastics things and having the twisties. He said he's not mentally able to perform with the Sixers. Not mentally able to perform with the Sixers. So what does that mean? Now, to most of us, I'm just going to assume here, right? To most of us, we read this and we see this and we're like, come on, dude. You just don't want to be there. And so you're going to use every possible excuse in the books to not play. But are we supposed to be sensitive to it? Right? You guys tell me, like, am I supposed to be sensitive to Ben Simmons because Ben Simmons, well, he tried to no-show, then he showed up so he'd get paid. Then he seemingly purposely got kicked out of practice. Now they're going to return home, play in front of Philadelphia fans who are going to give him the business, and suddenly now he's got a mental health issue. Byer, you tell me, should I be sensitive to Ben Simmons?
No.
Why not?
I just don't think that there has, from everything that we've heard over the last, 3 months since the Sixers, 4 months since the Sixers were eliminated from the playoffs, none of this has been brought up.
I agree. Now, it doesn't mean that, I agree with you, okay? Now, a psychologist or somebody else will say, well, that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It just means correct. He didn't share it at this time, yeah. Whatever, all the stuff he's going through. And I have no doubt that there's a mental health issue there. I've seen it myself where when you miss shots, you don't shoot, it builds up and it's like stage fright. You can't even get yourself to shoot a basketball. I have no doubt there, but is it so debilitating that through an entire offseason, he can't work through it? I don't believe it. I think it's bull, but I'm not allowed to be sensitive at all to it. Right, which is kind of part of my, I understand the stories are far different, but again, that plays into, wait, we're picking and choosing based upon what we actually believe in terms of mental health.
Yeah, and the whole reason why I hesitated is exactly how I think you know, and because you don't want to just pass it off, because I believe it is a real thing. But I don't believe that that is what is the issue with Ben Simmons right now. Now, maybe this is developed because of how things have gone on with the 76ers. Maybe I should be more sensitive to that. But there just didn't seem to be, there just never seemed to be that narrative. Both sides were talking. Both sides were agreeing on getting out of Philly. Then he lost money. And so then he shows up at the team facility with people not even knowing that he's going to be there. And then we find out he can't recuperate the money. And he's just hanging, like there's, I don't know. It just seems like there were other issues than his mental well-being at the time.
Well, you and I actually agree. It's just this interesting space in which we're in. Let me ask you, Jason Stewart, how do you, when you hear a guy go, "Hey, I got mental health issues," how does it land with you?
I mean, in a vacuum, I would take it at face value, but it's way too much water under the bridge here, right? Especially if you read these reports now that, like, the one caveat or the one loophole in the collective bargain contract here is that the team has to pay you if the reason why you can't play is for mental health issues. It's almost like his agent went down the contract and said, "This is the one thing that we could use here and still get paid." I think there's a healthy skepticism from a lot of people here, and it doesn't look at insensitive. The Simone Biles thing, I think, is a completely different situation. That was just kind of out of nowhere and us reacting to a certain situation. To Dan's point, there's been so many building blocks here that it's like, okay, now you're going to go to this one? I mean, I think that skepticism is not insensitive here. That's my long answer to your question, Doug.
No, I love that answer because I actually agree with it in many different ways. I just think it's interesting. I mean, like, look, finding the loophole where you still get paid, I mean, it's kind of diabolical. And, you know, saying you have mental health issues generally is like saying, "Hey, my mom has cancer," and then you lay off the "yo mama" jokes, right? Like, everybody's like, whoa, stay away there. But he just doesn't have any equity. Doesn't have any equity. Yes.
Yeah, I think that the damage that it could do going further, if this isn't the case, to real mental health issues. Like, you know, you mentioned Simone Biles. Simone Biles was competing in the Olympics and then tried her, you know, vault, and it didn't work. Ben Simmons just didn't show up. I mean, like, there's something about going through and all of it. And so when she walked away, like, she gave an attempt. Ben was just staying away himself until he started losing money. So it's very difficult for me to compare the two. And then you throw in the U.S. gymnastics and the sexual abuse that went into that organization. And so to me, I can't even compare the two of being on the same page.
I agree, but I also think that, you know, again, it's one of those, like, all right, do we call a guy out for faking it?
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about. Like, I mean, that's what I would be concerned about, because I think that there's been great strides in this. And so now, you know, we've had people who have questioned other athletes, and this is to me the most obvious that I have seen where I think it's different. I think it's different than Simone Biles. I think it's different than Naomi Osaka. And it just, to me, is just, you know, almost like a, you know, crying wolf in essence.
Oh, no, I don't doubt it. I also think Naomi Osaka's is completely different than Simone Biles. Yeah. Is completely different than, like, yeah, you pick. Like, Naomi Osaka didn't love all the attention. The problem was, like, her career path was one that brought her more and more attention. Like, she wasn't comfortable being under whatever level of microscope she felt like she was under. And yet you were on the cover of Sports Illustrated. You did light the torch. You did win the U.S. Open. Like, these are things, and you win the U.S. Open is in within your field. So that's an achievement. But the other stuff is stuff that you could have easily, like, "Hey, I'm not comfortable there." It's like, there's a bunch of different sides to it. And I felt the Osaka thing only bothered me in that felt like she blamed the media for something that was going on with her personally, and I felt like that was unfair, calling out the media as being unfair, which I didn't think they were ever unfair to her.
Yeah, understood, yeah.
So, yeah, they all are different, but it is fascinating, and it does feel like Ben Simmons is one of these rare guys that with every next move that they figure out, he has less and less equity with the public. Right? Less and less equity with the public.
Yep.
You know, had he, honestly, had he said, hey, look, man, I'm having some, and he said 3 months ago, I'm having some issues. You know, anybody who's ever dealt with mental health issues in sports, call it the yips. I can't get myself to shoot. I can't make it. I struggle in front of a crowd of people shooting the basketball. Like, he didn't even have to do that. If he said, like, all this stuff is related to mental health issues, people would have been like, hey, you're good. Take all the time. The problem was we didn't hear any of that. You know, all we heard was he's working out with his guy and they're posting these videos, you know, of him working out and making jump shots. And then I don't want to play for you anymore. I'm putting my houses on the market. I'm not showing up. I'm going to show up. Then I do show up. I got my cell phone in my pocket. Then I don't want to participate. And now you go mental health issue. Yeah, I mean, it does. It sounds exactly like Boy Who Cried Wolf. Exactly like it.
To your point, Doug, it's like, you know, obviously Twitter's a real bad barometer, but I don't know if you saw this, but the Sixers are kind of getting some blowback for calling for the psychiatric evaluation, right? And to me, that's like a business protecting their own. That's what they're supposed to do. It's like that story with Kobe Bryant's wife, Vanessa. It got leaked that the Orange County is asking for a psych eval of her, and they're getting a bunch of stuff. But these are people protecting their enterprises here. This is the way business is run. But it's gotten to that point in society where you can't even question anything that has to do with mental health.
Yeah, I mean, the I don't know enough about, I know exactly what you're saying with the Vanessa Bryant thing, which I believe, honestly, is, that's kind of par for the course, right? It's par for the course. She's saying her mental health is affected by the fact that these sheriff's deputies shared these photos, which is just awful, right? And she's suing them. So as part of defending yourself, there's, I'm sure a lawyer's like, okay, well, she's got to get a mental health eval, right? That's how we do it. And then I'm guessing her lawyer, somebody from her side, leaks that out. Are you kidding me? You want this woman whose husband and daughter died in a helicopter crash to get a mental health eval? And the answer is like, yeah, that's actually what we do. That's how the process actually works. So I'm with you. I don't think it's as sinister as it's being positioned to be.